Okay, we're ready to get going here. So we'd like to get started this evening. We'd like to welcome you tonight to Karen Scholl's Teleseminar. I am your host, Melinda Garish, and we're with Cutting Up Staples here in Indiana. And Karen, we'd like to thank you for joining us tonight. And we've got some real exciting topics to talk about. The first one we've got is separation anxiety. And we're going to talk about bucking, horsemanship for women, preparing for the farrier, and kicking on the trail. So if you would, we'll just go ahead and get started right away here. This first question is from Sue, and this is on the separation anxiety. She says, we have four generations of horses that live together and never seem to have enough time to ride. When we do, most of our horses suffer from separation anxiety. They are so talented. We have taken most of them to level 3 and 4 in the natural horsemanship program. But the separation anxiety makes their brains just melt. I have tried so many different avenues. One, having them work when they are close together and rest further apart. Gradually increasing distance between them. Stop, face me, and move feet a lot when they scream. And then four, we've also everything uncomfortable I can think of that causes them to have to work and pay immediate attention to me. It got so bad this last weekend, I was just exasperated. There were only about 75 feet away, and my guy was screaming his head off. I must have backed, side passed, did front and hind end pivots all on the ground for over 5 miles during the course of 6 hours. Every time he quieted, I let him stand, and he could eat and relax. After a while, as soon as he screamed, he started backing himself because he knew it was coming. Then he decided he could move forward, backward, sideways, and all around very quickly and scream. I wanted to scream. He's 14 years old, for heaven's sake. I moved him a lot further away from other horses and found a nice steep hill, and every time he screamed, I backed up and down the hill fast, and no change. I gave up and tied him back to the trailer, and it doesn't matter if he can still see the other horses or not, he will scream. As I tied him, he screamed as loud as he could scream directly into my ear. I bopped him with a carrot stick for that one. He threw a tantrum and hit the end of the rope, then sat the end of the rope till it hurt his head. I just looked at him and shaked my head. He screamed some more, and I yelled at him to shut up, for heaven's sakes, now over 6 hours of screaming. I think I waggled my finger at him, too, because he hit the end of the rope again, and I could tell he said ouch, but he quit screaming faster and stayed quiet longer. So I hung around, and the next time he screamed, I made sure he didn't have far to go to hit the end of the rope, and I yelled quit. And at the end of the rope, I could tell he had a headache now, but that time it came right off the rope and dropped his head as if it was okay, you win, and he was quiet. So she's continued to repeat this, and this story goes on for quite a while, Karen. But yeah. Basically, yeah.
I have the picture.
I think you do. I figured you did.
Well, probably the one thing to know with horses, and this is a frustration that everybody has dealt with to some degree or another. The thing to know with horses, probably two key things right here. Number one, punishment does not work on prey animals. It doesn't work. So the idea that, you know, and then there's the element we all hear, cause the right thing to be easy, the wrong thing to be difficult. So we say, well, you know, it's not punishment. But what happens is before the behavior changes, the emotion comes up. So the emotion comes up, and now the horse, you know, is already keyed in to the absence of leadership as he perceives it. Okay. So when a horse does that, what they're telling you is that the leadership piece is not intact. Because if that horse viewed the person, and this is Sue, right?
Yes.
If the horse views you, Sue, as the true leader in the herd, then they wouldn't think about the other horses. It would transfer to you. Now, it goes back to the original thing. We say, well, we don't have time, you know, to ride. We don't have time for that. You know, how do we do that? And this is the thing where, you know, my program, you know, when I hear the term natural horsemanship, that tells me a piece of the puzzle. And the reason I say that is that a lot of times, and believe me, I have studied, if you're familiar with my background I went through the levels, you know, I studied it for years and years and years. And one of the reasons that I, you know, began sharing my, you know, perspective as unique to that is because leadership is different than dominance. And what you're taught generally in natural horsemanship is this phrase, you know, be the dominant horse. Well, when you, and I can see how it's perceived that way because the lead horse and herd is the one that's going around, you know, we see it as dominating other horses. The other horses move out of that horse's way or that horse will bite them, you know, all these kind of things. But there's a different aspect with dominance. And if you think of somebody, imagine somebody who is just an incredible leader, an example of just ideal leadership in your life, you would not describe that person as being dominant or a control freak or a micromanager. See? Those qualities are not what true leadership is really all about. So leadership does not mean, you know, the horse starts panicking or crying and that kind of thing, and then we go, okay, well, you know, you're going to go sideways and you're going to go backwards and you're going to do this and you're going to do that. Believe me, I've done that. I have done that, and it does not work. So if you can reframe your mind, and this is where sometimes people will observe, they'll give me feedback, they'll go, Karen, you know what you're sharing is more of a philosophy, a way of being around horses. And this is where leadership is a very different quality, and people who have my educational DVDs or read my articles or listen to the teleseminars or come to my clinics, you know, that's the thing is people say, you know, I don't hear you say dominance. Where's that word in your teaching? And I said, you know what, I don't find that dominance is an effective interaction with horses. I just don't find it to be true. So,
Karen?
That, yes.
Karen, it's Sue. I'm sorry. I dialed in just a minute late. I know you're talking about my issue, and I agree with you fully. I don't try to assert dominance over my horse,
Let me finish my explanation if I can.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's probably 25% of what I want to share with you here. Okay? So that being said, true leadership is an expectation that is held in every single thing that we do with horses. If that horse takes one step that I did not direct or invite or allow, I respond to that. If the horse is, you know, take a simple thing of leading the horse. When I'm leading the horse in my mind, I have a job. And that's what I want to shift people into, is thinking about, do you have a job? Now, we don't have a lot of time to ride. That's, you know, that's a fact of life. So if you take a horse out every day, you know, we have time to feed horses, you know, hopefully, or maybe not. Maybe you have other people feeding them. But even if you take horses out and take them out of the field and tie them to a safe place, it does not hurt horses to be tied. And so this is the thing that happens, is that we generally don't do even something as simple as that. It doesn't have to be go out and ride for so many hours or do those kinds of things. I mean, if you can, that's great. The more time that you spend with the horse, the more interaction that you develop with the horse, the more that horse is looking to you for their, you know, for their safety and their guidance and their direction. But what we tend to do is, you know, throw hay and, you know, off to work we go. But even if you have 30 minutes, put a halter on, bring that horse in and feed him tied, you know, to a safe place and set it up so that that horse starts creating a positive response to being with humans more so, not more so, because that's pretty hard to compete with, than being turned out with their buddies in the pasture. So take the horse that has a real job, for example, and I'm going to use my friend Dan Moyer as I do oftentimes, because he's one of the few people that really truly has horses for a job. And I'll tell you what, I don't see horses taking a single step that's not in tune with his. Okay? Not a single step. If he stops, they stop. They are so in tune with him because he's on the job. His mind is where he's going to, what he's going to do, what he's going to do next. And that horse may stand tied at that trailer without his buddies for hours if that's what his work that day warrants. And that's not a cruel thing to do. So he's taken horses that sound just like the exact same horse that people have been frustrated with and actually got to a point of giving up on. He has a horse that he uses regularly that was given to him, a nice horse, well-bred, I mean a nice horse, given to him because the woman knew that that horse needed a real job. And, you know, Dan never had a bit of problem with that horse because he didn't think of it that way. That horse and he had the miles to put on. He had this, even if he just took it out and tied him up and used him. I want to give you this idea of, even though you may not have a real job like, you know, somebody, you know, who cowboys for a living does, the feeling that you exude can be absolutely the same. So when the horse starts calling or the horse does this, it's almost too late by then. You know what I mean? It's almost too late by then because what that horse is saying is that the bond between you needs to come from a different place. So horses, you know, create that bond by demonstrating assertiveness. And so what I find is if the horse, and this is where I was kind of listening for patterns in there as I do, when the horse relaxes, then, you know, and quits calling, then somehow we think, oh, well, we're going to reinforce that by doing nothing and leaving them alone and letting them relax. See, and that's where I think we lose them again. Idle hands are the devil's workshop, you know. What I'm doing with a horse, I talked to a good friend of mine the other day. I used her horse for some photos in an upcoming article, and this horse just didn't know or ask or for whatever reason, just for mounting. It's an article coming out on dismounting. And so I was mounting and dismounting, and this horse just didn't know to just stand still. So I have the opportunity to fiddle around with them. And, you know, she said, oh, well, he doesn't really, you know, he just thinks, you know, get on and go. And I said, well, I understand that. But, I mean, it didn't take 5-10 minutes for me to have a different conversation with this horse. And guess where he was walking to? He wanted to walk off, you know, towards the barn, get back to the barn, because we took him over to, you know, an area with a nicer background, that kind of thing, away from the barn. You can't fault him for that. That's a survival mechanism, you know, in a prey animal. And that kind of a horse that you're describing, Sue, that horse is voted most likely to survive in the wild. It's a smart horse, knows where the survival is, but to transfer that quality of leadership in that horse's mind to you is different than the approach that you're taking right now. Okay.
Yes, Tara,
so, Sue, do you want to give me some more information here?
Yeah, I do, because this is where I'm confused. I mean, I've had this horse since birth. I have 4 generations of him. I don't have a lot of time to ride, but I've spent a lot of time with him. And every day I do a little something with him. He will follow me. He will leave the rest of the horses. He will stay with me. When I tack him, untack him on a ride, he's not tied. I don't have to worry about him leaving. He'll stay with me. I can put him anywhere. He'll stay exactly where I ask him to be. He seems to look to me for leadership on trails. He'll question me if he's confused. He doesn't go and do anything that I don't ask him to do. So
when does it change?
It doesn't change all the time. And what I tagged to the end of the note that I sent you that I'm not sure if you got to see because it was way at the end, is I've been watching him, and I think he has just emotional throwback issues sometimes because he's extremely emotional about food, too. He's the dominant horse. He's the alpha horse. He doesn't have to fight for food. He has food in front of him 20 to 24 hours a day. But when I go to bring the horses in or he knows that I'm putting grain in the feeders, he gets so emotional he starts biting himself. And none of the horses are allowed to just run out of the arena and go into their stalls. Each one has to wait their turn. They come up to me when I call them. The gate stays open. And then they wait to ask permission to go into their respective pens. Phantom, the one in question, he'll do that, but he's so nervous, he starts chewing on his teeth and, you know, grinding his teeth, and a couple times he's blown past me. So now what I've added in addition to that is he's the last one. I'm trying to get him to control his emotions. I mean, there are times we go out on rides and I can just leave everybody and he's fine, but there are times where his emotion just absolutely takes over. I never know exactly when it's going to happen.
Let me give you a suggestion here, Sue.
Okay.
When you go out and start throwing grain, and the horses are agitated and they're walking around and, you know, carrying on, that kind of thing, I'd keep the pens closed and I'd go back in the house and have breakfast.
Oh, no, I put the food in the morning, and they don't come in until about 3 or 4 hours later. But when I'm getting them ready to come in, he gets so agitated. So now he's the last horse. He has to wait. And I shut his pen because he blew past me a couple of times this past week, so I shut his pen so even if he blows past me, he can't get to his food. And then he has to go out, and I will sit there in a chair about 30 feet away from the gate, and he has to stay in the arena. He's not allowed to come by the gate until I call him. And so he'll stand in the corner and he'll kind of pout until I call him, and then he has to walk out. He has to come in a different direction from his stall, and he has to stand by me while I'll pet him or scratch him as I'm sitting in the chair, and then he has to walk with me. And of course we do the stop, back up a step, whatever, to make sure he's still fully in tune with me so he gets his food. But he is so emotional about it. And when I throw hay, they're all out. They all go out at night because it's cooler at night. And I have 9 separate feeders, even though there's only 6 horses, and they all get filled up with hay. And he spends so much time trying to chase the other horses off so that he has all the feeders. He's so emotional about it. When I'm there, he won't do it. But the second that I'm out of sight, he'll go and he'll do it. And so I'm thinking he's got periodic emotional issues. Now, he does have this, not a severe case, but he does have the stallion self-fertilization syndrome, where when he gets agitated, and right now it's just about food, he will bite himself.
Yeah. Yeah, so, biting, when horses start biting themselves, it's pretty extreme. That's called self-mutilation.
Yeah.
And I've seen horses get so bad, you know, that they actually have to be protected. And
yeah,
is he getting that bad?
I have to put a fly sheet on him 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, because for some reason, as long as he had the sheet on, he wouldn't bite himself. The only time he does it now, he was gelded a few years ago, and that's one of the reasons I gelded him, hoping it would stop. But he only does it now when food it comes into the picture at some point in time.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm thinking, I think, and I could be wrong, but I think he views me as a good leader because he'll leave the herd, he'll do everything I want, he stays absolutely in tune with me with everything, and then all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, all of a sudden he'll start screaming. And it's not all the time. But his emotions seem to carry over to other things, like the food. So that's why I was wondering if there was any exercises to help him to learn to control his emotions in general.
It sounds like he goes to a place that other than you know, like I gave you the example of that horse, you know, with Dan Moyer, is that, you know, he has a job, and that kind of behavior, he you just don't even see it, you know. And that's a horse, you know, like you're describing, probably not to that extent where he's, you know, self-mutilating or something like that, you know. But that's the thing that we have a lot of difficulty with horses, because here's what I'm picturing, is a very athletic, well-bred, well-fed horse with energy coming out of his ears. And I guess I have a question there, Sue. If you're not riding that much, I just have a question of, you know, is the grain even necessary?
Oh, it's just a very small amount of grain. It's a couple handfuls to get them in during the day, and then they're not on a high protein feed, not on a high energy feed, and then twice a week they get a little bit more so they can have some Metamucil mixed in with it. I don't believe in overgraining at all, because I studied nutrition for a long time.
Okay. Because that's another question, too, is sometimes behaviors are, you know, can come from being, you know, highly overfed. And it sounds like
absolutely
they have free choice
to
A during the day, too.
Absolutely.
You know, it sounds like kind of the 1-in-100 horse, too, that, you know, this is a very unique and a very unusual behavior. And in absence of having that horse, the, you know, a horse that has a job, you know, every day, all day long, to give him that perspective of wherever I go, there I am, and I'm just, if somebody's not asking me to do something, I'm glad to just hang out here, and I don't care where anybody else is. Because sometimes what happens is under certain conditions, like familiar trails or familiar environments, that kind of a thing, the dynamic that we've developed in our relationship is really solid. And then we change condition. Some condition, even if it's in the horse's mind, changes. So we go to a different environment or a different situation or travel with a different horse. And then we have the opportunity, as Dr. Miller talks about, that's Dr. Robert Miller, who developed full imprinting, is that we have the opportunity at that point to reinforce the behaviors that we have established in the other locations, in the familiar locations,
right,
until the horse becomes seasoned. But it sounds like you go to a lot of different locations and do that. Is that correct?
We do. And sometimes he's fine and he's relaxed and he's just happy because he's not asked anything right now, and he's a little tired because he's not in very good shape anyway, so he's just happy to kind of hang out. And then sometimes something just seems to just click in his head,
right,
and all of a sudden he'll pick his head up and he'll start screaming for the other horse. It's like,
right,
what is wrong with you? And then other,
yeah,
times he's fine. He could care less. He'll leave the other horses. Even when he's screaming, he'll leave the other horses and he will come with me if I ask,
mm-hmm,
him to, but it won't stop him from screaming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he'll do it at liberty. He'll come,
mm-hmm,
and he will follow me, but he won't stop screaming.
So say at liberty, say you have a scenario like a round pen, okay, and you have the horse going around the round pen, and say he's at a canter or maybe even frantic and he's screaming. How do you respond to that?
He doesn't get frantic. He just screams.
Well, if he's screaming, he's not
frantic emotionally. Not, yes.
He's not relaxed.
Right.
Okay. So how do you respond to that?
I ask him to try to get his focus on me. We're going to go over here. We're going to do this. That's what. And he will pay attention to absolutely everything I ask him. Every footfall I place, if I want him to mirror it, he will do it without fault. But he won't stop screaming.
Because there's another, you know, in absence of me seeing this too, and I do video coaching. If you want to look on my website and seeing that, and this is a private session already, but in absence of that, a lot of times what horses do is they get so familiar with our signals that they can mentally check out and still be worrying about the other horses.
That's exactly what I think is happening.
Yeah.
He's on autopilot. Yeah.
So here's something for you to think of. If I had him in a round pen and he was calling to the other horses, what do you think I would do?
I don't know because I'm at a loss right now.
If you did know, what did you just use your imagination? What's that?
Give him a job to do.
How would I do that?
How would you give him a job?
Yeah.
Or what job would you give him? I'm not sure.
Either one. What do you think I would physically do? Do you think I would go in and do my routine of signals and, you know?
No, I think you'd break up any of the routine that he had memorized, which is something that I tried to do.
Uh-huh.
And then I took him out and so that he was like pretty far away, and there was a big hill, and we had never been on it. And I said, well, let's just kind of back up and down it and do some things that, you know, you really need to pay attention and think about what you're doing or you're going to trip yourself up. And he tripped himself up a little bit, but he did most of it really well, but he never stopped screaming. So it's like, I had such a headache after 6 hours solid of this and trying absolutely everything I could think of. I was just like, I give up.
And sometimes, you know, horses get into a state. I mean, that's a mental, you know, state that you're describing.
He was 20 miles away.
And this is the thing, Sue, with, you know, the state that you're describing with him biting himself. I don't know of a more extreme mental state of distress that a horse can be in.
I don't know why he would have that, though.
I don't know that it really matters why he would have that, because it's not that it doesn't matter, but your question is then, you know, how do I shape that? How do I reshape that behavior? And I'm going to say something I'm hesitating to say, is because I don't want it to be taken wrong. And I have only one other time made this suggestion, and it was a horse that self-mutilated so extremely that he would actually open up his chest. I mean, at one point they had to sew him back. I mean, it was that extreme. Years ago at a clinic in Colorado, some people approached me and they gave me a device to try and use because they just rave about it. And it's basically a shock collar for horses.
Oh, I thought I invented that. Yeah, I did that years ago. And I had the remote control. It was one of the hunting dog collars. And I put it on low, and it also had a tone. It had the shock and then just had the tone. So he used the shock for a little while every time he went to go bite himself, and then eventually he was conditioned to the tone, so I just did the tone. But it turned out that every time he'd go to turn around and get worried about biting himself, he'd jump up in the air and spin around, being afraid he was going to get shocked, but it never stopped him. I mean, he's 14 now.
See, and this is where, so you've confirmed my opinion of it. It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work. The only thing that I've been able to get him stuff, and he doesn't tear himself open. He's got some scars around by his flanks from doing it, but he hasn't broke skin in a while. The only thing that's ever stopped him from biting himself is leaving the fly sheet on. I don't know why when the fly sheet's on he won't even try. But it's the whole thing. It's the core of the emotion. I'm lost how to help him because I don't know why he'd be so emotional about food. He's never been deprived of food. He's never had to fight for food. He's never been in a situation that should have caused him any type of anxiety about food.
Right. Well, you know what? Maybe you touched on something there, Sue. Maybe he should.
Maybe he should.
Well, you know, it's kind of like the first child. Everybody's quiet when the baby's sleeping. And, you know, even as adults, the firstborn can't hardly sleep with any noise in the house. Where the one that's born fourth or fifth or sixth, they could sleep through, you know, World War III. Do you know what I mean? So if that horse has never learned, like from a young age, that they need to wait or that an empty stomach is okay, and it'll survive that. Do you know what I mean? If the horse has never, it could be touching on that extreme. Because anything in extremes is where you start seeing these kind of, you know, and that's where, you know, it's like being a psychologist, part detective, going, okay, you know, where might this come from? You know, where might this stem from?
Yeah.
I don't know.
He's just got emotional issues that transcend multiple different situations. They are where it seems to flare up sometimes with the separation anxiety. And with the food, like I said, the only thing that I've decided, and this is just over the past couple months, I've decided now that he is going to be the last person. He is going to have to wait. He is going to have to come to me, and he's going to have to stand there while I pet him for absolutely as long as I ask him to, and he's going to have to just learn how to control his emotions about worrying about getting to the food.
Well, let me ask you a question. I mean, he's not getting, you know, he wouldn't miss having the grain. I mean, if he were up there and you petted him and all that kind of stuff, and then he never did get his grain.
Well, there's a couple times he didn't get his grain because he blew past me, and so he got thrown back out in the arena, and We didn't get any rain.
Right, right. But I mean for weeks. I mean for weeks until he kind of comes in, the other horses get grain, and that. And I understand it's easy to use grain to have the horses come up, you know, but you maybe you pick, you know, two horses that get grain and the other ones don't. Now, about half my audience right now is going, oh, you can't do that. See, you can do that. And it's not doing it to the horse. It's doing it for the horse. So those horses become kind of like, you know, a roulette wheel. We don't know who's going to get it today. You see?
Yeah, it's kind of the way
so
they are. It's
maybe changing it up to that. If you've been, it sounds like, you know, you have, you know, the utmost care, they're, you know, fed regularly, you know, all these kind of things. One of the things I suggest just in feeding times in general is not to feed horses on a schedule.
Oh, they never know when they're getting fed. They're just happy to get fed. I work from home, but I'm on the phone all the time. So they could get fed at 5 o'clock in the morning, or their first feeding might be 11 o'clock in the morning. But they have no idea when they're getting fed.
Right. And so that ties into that same principle of, you know, they don't know when they're going to be fed. So maybe branch that off, broaden that, and say, you don't know if you're going to have grain. You see? Until finally when he comes up and starts going, I guess I just don't get grain. I mean, what if you had a grain allergy and you couldn't get, you know? So, and I'm not saying that that's the answer. I'm just offering possibilities because,
because
horsemanship really becomes, you know, a practice where, you know, it's like a doctor and says, okay, you know, try this, and it sounds like you're already doing that. You're, you know, considering every kind of option and possibility. But it's always a state. A mental state comes from a pattern. And if you can identify the pattern, do something to interrupt the pattern, it translates into interrupting the mental state. But it's sometimes, you know, deeply ingrained patterns like that, it doesn't take much for a horse to go back into a pattern. You see?
Right.
So, you know, think about that and play with that. And maybe when he gets into a state like you were describing with the 6 hours, if you just go, man, I don't know, you know, how I don't have the energy or the wherewithal or, you know, whatever it is. But if you think about it, Sue, if he's familiar with your signal to a point where he's tuning out, then he can hold another thought, then you're at a stage that I try to describe to people to become more provocative. And provocative means interesting. How can, and it sounds like you do so many things with them. Sometimes, you know, and I know Melinda, you know, Melinda gets into this with her horse. She performs with her horse. And her horse kind of, you know, can do this with his eyes closed. He can sit on a beaten guide chair and he can lay down. He can, you know, do all these really wonderful things. But if we don't mix it up and turn it around and do things different, and it's hard. I have to do these things with my horses, you know. I was driving them a couple of summers ago. I played pull across on them. I try to find things. When I get opportunities at a horse expo, you know, the people offer, hey, do you want to come and do mounted shooting? And I go introduce, you know, guns to my horses. You know, as many things as I can possibly think of to take my ability to hold that conversation into different scenarios. To me, that's what broadens and strengthens that connection with me.
Yeah,
and the moment we stop, you've heard of being positive, progressive, and natural. That progressive part is a real key part because in anything, somebody can be a, you know, astrophysicist, but if they do the same thing all the time, even they get bored at a high level. So, you know, keep challenging that. And like I said, in that liberty thing, when the horse has time to have another thought, change it up quicker. Let it get ugly. Don't look for perfection and precision. Do something in such a way that horse goes, hey, wait a minute. You've never done that before. Say, I want you faster. I want it snappy. I want it slow. Okay. Something where I'm holding it, it could change any minute. It sounds like you do that a lot, and there's another stage that this horse needs you to help.
Yeah,
with.
That's where I went through everything I had in my toolbox, my mental toolbox to work with on him at different speeds and mixing it up and all sorts of different things, and I ran out. I just ran out. After 5 or 6 hours, I had nothing else that I could come up with.
Well, and sometimes, too, you know, you can try and try and try, and you just sometimes just step back. Don't get you or the horse hurt. Tie him up and walk away. You know, it doesn't, sometimes we just really get at a lot. You know, we really do. But
I could inject something here, something that I have found. And I think we've talked about it before, but we haven't mentioned it tonight. But if I've got a horse that doesn't want to be caught, or a horse that's emotionally out on the trail, or whatever's going on, and I've just kind of stumbled on that, is if I begin to hum, I don't know if it calms me down, but it makes the horse curious as to what's going on. And all of a sudden, horses that don't want to be caught are, you know, coming up. I mean, it's a quieting effect, but it does change their behavior. And I was riding a horse that I don't have any longer, but at one time I had a screamer like what she's talking about. And just on the trail, I don't know what it does. I don't know why it works, but in my particular case it has, and I just begin humming. I can't even tell you what I hum. It doesn't matter.
I think you're onto something where it tends to relax your body, too, as well, but not a bad idea. I get him a Walkman.
Well, you know, something that you're describing there is that, you know, when, especially like you're describing, Sue, you have such a connection with this horse. And, you know, Sue, do you have children?
I do.
You do. So when your child was an infant and you were upset, did you find that your baby reflected that? That they would cry and you couldn't soothe them, and then all of a sudden you realize, oh gosh, I'm upset. You're not even, you know, you're in the proximity. But a lot of times people, you know, mothers will say, gosh, you know, the baby was upset and I couldn't get them. They were fussy, and then I reflected on it and I realized, you know, they picked up on that.
I know how extremely receptive, not just babies, but children up to, you know, a fairly decent age are really, really perceptive. So I was always very careful about that. And I know animals are too. I mean, because you just unconsciously, you have a different body posture, you have a different breathing, you have just a different way about you when you're upset.
Right. Right. I'll share with you one more thing to think about in this scenario. You know, I ran Mr. Crowley's organization for many years, and he shared lots of stories, one in particular about his son, Caton, who had brain damage as a baby. There was water on the brain. They didn't identify it right away. But Caton lost a lot of movement, you know, on one side of his body. And so he rode a horse that was real quiet and calm, and, you know, he went along. And when he was really little, Pat even had to He used light, really light leather strings because Caton would fall off his horse. So it was something that would break if it needed to, but it just gave him a little stability sitting there. I mean, this is, you know, his son, you know, riding along. That was the scenario. And they were riding along one time, and Pat had a gentleman with him, and the horse was just in a frantic. I mean, just screaming, in a froth, jigging, you know, and the man had a hold of the horse, and you know, he kept hanging on, and finally he said, you know, Pat, what should I do? What should I do? The horse is so upset. He's so upset. You know, what do I do? And, you know, Pat, he looked at me and says, well, you know what I think would really help? He said, let's just switch horses with you and Caton. And the man said, Caton can't ride. Oh, my gosh, he can't ride that horse. Oh, all this stuff. Well, Pat said, this will help. Trust me. Yeah, and they switched, and guess what happened to the horses?
The horse calmed down, and I've seen a lot of kids.
Caton, and guess what happened to Caton's horse?
He got wound up.
Right. So that's something to think about. And, you know, it's hard to identify because it sounds like you're doing so many good things that I think the thing that's going to reach your horse is going to be something really subtle.
Yeah,
and hard to identify.
It's and I fully relate to what you're saying in the saddle, and I absolutely try to make sure that I adhere to that at all times.
Yeah.
It's him with himself, even just him by himself. He just, he can't seem, he loses his emotional balance.
Right, right. And that's something what you may find one day too, and I've found this with Bergante, because I dealt with some, you know, things, you know, with him. And all of a sudden, one day, something shifted. And I can't even tell you what it was that it changed.
Way back.
So, did I give you some ideas and things to think about?
I mean, I can work with him with the food and, you know, just switch off who gets fed and who doesn't. I think what you were saying, I should continue to work with him on ensuring that he doesn't just go try to run off to his food, that he, you know, can stay with me and learn patience. I don't know if that's going to be enough for him. I just feel that I don't, and I'm not real sure what triggers him to get emotionally unbalanced.
I didn't talk about patience. I talked about change the pattern.
Right.
And change the pattern doesn't mean you behave yourself or you're not getting, it means,
well, but that's a change,
you know,
the
what?
Pattern is having him walk over and instead of going to his food, go in the opposite direction and kind of hang with me for a little bit. So that does break up his pattern. And in the process, I'm hoping that'll help him to learn patience as well. Am I wrong? Did I mess that up?
Well, no. You're on the right track. But for the extreme situation that you're describing here, Sue, I would take the grain piece out of it or have him even go into an empty bin. You know?
Karen, sometimes
because
when you do it,
Because he doesn't need the grain, right? I mean, it's not like it's going to hurt him at all to not have it. But I mean to change it up even maybe to that extent in that scenario.
Karen, something I've seen you do at clinics that is kind of jogging my thoughts here. When you're first teaching some of your techniques and things and people don't realize that they're moving their feet or something's going on and you try to get them to stand, they continue to move the feet and they're not even aware that they're doing it. I'm wondering if there's some things going on that maybe she's just not even aware that's happening. Maybe she ought to have someone videotape what really is happening where she could watch and actually see what the horse is doing and see what she's doing, because she may be doing something that she just doesn't realize it, because, you know, we all do that. And it's like, I can't stop that. They really
Well, the thing I talked about, and this is the other piece of it, is to change things up enough that it surprises him or startles him that it, and even gets ugly. So get kind of move beyond the precision kind of a thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think
interacting with him. And this is just, you know, what I'm picturing is that, you know, things, you know, you're well studied, you're well practiced, you know, you're doing things. You know, when you're asking things of him, change it to be snappy or slower. So when he sees your signal, he doesn't just go, okay, I'm going to make this turn. You might change it and say, we're going to make this turn at this pace, or you're going to make this turn, you know, at this pace, and mix it up. And Melinda, do you remember the gal that came to your clinic and she did so many things, like her horse, she could go over and point at something and her horse could put his right front foot or back left or, you know, stand up on the fence. I mean, he was a little trick pony, you know. I mean, he could do, you know, all kinds of things. But as I was asking her to do things kind of from a different approach, it unraveled on her. And she wasn't too happy about that. If you remember that, Melinda?
I do remember
yeah.
that.
And because she said, but these things are all good. And I said, I recognize that. I validate, man, that's all good. Now, let's change things up and mix things up. And this is where, Sue, do you have my DVDs?
I think I have one of them. I know I've seen a few of them at a friend's house.
Okay. Because what people will see in the DVDs is that the expression of the horse, when I interact with horses, it's not so much about the technique, but it's being able to emulate horse behavior.
Right,
so when I communicate with my horses, you know, horses don't learn a technique to communicate with each other. what they do is they have a way of posturing, pressure, nipping, and dropping that pressure again. It's very, you know, it's very simplified. And so with that simple formula in place, the variety of communication is actually exponential. Okay. So sometimes when horses get used to the routine, that's the other piece I hope you take away from this too. It changes the routine, and rather than demonstrate a technique, especially kind of perfectly and with precision, start just feeling that interaction with that horse the way another horse would interact with them.
And it's subtle,
but sometimes those are the things that will make the difference for that horse. Okay?
Karen, you've known Mary Sutherland for a long time, right?
Yes.
Mary's been coming out about once a week. So I told her that I was going to listen to the seminar, and I was going to relay back to her, because I don't think she had an opportunity to dial in, what it is that your suggestions are, because she's been watching and trying to help me with some things too. So I'm going to have her also watch me and help me take it to that different level that you're talking about, where we really kind of shake things up for them.
Okay.
She's actually scheduled to come out tomorrow, so we're going to try to put it into play tomorrow.
That's great. So when you think about this, Sue, how do horses interact with each other? And hold that in your mind, and so when you have the interaction with him, you're going to emulate another horse, and not just any horse, a lead horse. Okay, and that's different than just technique, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what we do with a lot of the herd body language, especially with the horses, where we can even just cock our head now, and they know that it would emulate like an ears being pinned back, or get them to back off by just kind of shifting our weight back and pulling up a foot. We might not take it to the level that we need to, but we've been trying to do that.
Okay, because I'll hold a simple question just so you can get the picture of what I'm trying to convey in my mind. When you back your horse up, say you're on the ground, and you posture to the horse, can you have that horse back up so far so fast that it would step on his own tail and almost fall over backwards?
Yeah, not this particular horse, but one of mine. Yeah, he'll back up so fast he'll trip over his own feet.
Okay. Find that in this horse.
Okay.
If your horse were turned out with my mares, how quickly do you think he'd be backing up, and how fast?
Oh, he'd be headed for the hills so fast.
See, these are the things that, you know, when, you know, we get to a point where we just get a loss, like you described. We're at a loss of tools in our current tool bag, and that's, I really want to compliment you for, you know, bringing this great question to the teleseminar, because it's kind of that 1 in 100 horses where most people are having, you know, kind of basic troubles and they start building it. You've got through and you have a lot of really great foundation, it sounds like, going. And now it's become kind of, you know, not routine, but, you know, like my husband and I have been married 22 years now. And so you get into a routine to where you realize you don't even look into each other's face and gaze into each other's eyes. You know, you kind of go, hey, how you doing? How's your day at work? And off you go to the next thing. So, you know, try to break that routine. And that's what you're doing by even making this, you know, inquiry and this phone call, is to say, okay, you know, listen to this. What is it? You know, this, and you've got a couple of things. You've got, you know, routine going with him. Not the highest level of leadership that you could have, because if he's not backing up like your other horse, that there's a piece there, and also interrupting the pattern, you know, around the food element of things. And even if you don't have time to ride through, if you can just catch him up and tie him, just catch him up and tie him different places and just leave him. Most horses, we just don't tie for very long. You know, people think 20 minutes is a long time to leave them tied, you know. So you have a lot of opportunities to. If you interrupt the pattern, you'll change the mental state of the horse. But it's going to be something you're going to chip away at And one day you'll just go, I don't even know what I did, but something has shifted inside of them.
Yeah, no, this is, I think you've really hit on something there. And I think what I'll start doing is putting a list of things together in my mind and on paper that maybe I can do and running that past Mary and seeing if we can just really build up that list of different things that we can do and snappying it up a bit, I know, is something that probably I need to do with him as well.
Yeah, and that's really common. In fact, I think when last time I saw Mary, I did a one-day workshop out probably in your area out at Vicki West. Do you know Vicki?
Yes.
Yeah. So I did a one-day workshop out there, and I talked about the five most common misconceptions around, people call it natural horsemanship. I prefer to call it psychology-based training. And that was one of them. That was one of them. You know, is the progressive, part of things, changing things up, snappier, slower, expanding, taking what you've got and changing it. You know, it's just like anything. Even at a very high level, we get bored unless things are getting mixed up and changing. So, and that's why it's important to continue to put ourselves under the auspicion of somebody that's just further down the road, than where we're at right now. So hopefully that helps you out too and gives you some ideas and plans. I'd love for your horse, next time you go out there, he's going to look at you and go, you're different. I can't put my finger on it, but you seem different, Sue.
I guess I want him to be more comfortable with himself too. It really makes me feel bad that he's feeling this level of anxiety and I'm not doing the things I need to do to help him be just more comfortable in his own skin.
Well, let me ask you a question. When you feel bad about him feeling bad, what effect do you think that has?
Well, he probably picks up on it, but I don't know how he's reading it.
Because horses feel what you feel. So when the horse is upset, if you get upset, it translates. So when my horses get upset, I look at them and I go, wow, you're really upset. Huh. Okay, off we go.
Get upset with him. I get more disappointed in myself that I don't know enough to help him.
Well, but you, nobody knows, nobody, we're all going to run into things that we don't know what to do with. All of us do. But if that takes you in a direction to get more education or make this kind of a phone call, have to make this kind of a discussion happen, then it serves you. But sometimes, isn't it true, Sue, that sometimes things have to get so bad before, and it sounds like you've made lots of things searching for this, but it still didn't work, and it got to a point where you came to this. Do you see? So it's not that it's a bad thing. It's giving you the direction that, hey, it's not working, keep trying. That didn't work, try something else. That didn't work, try something else. That didn't work, try something else. And keep going. Don't let anything stop you.
Well, I appreciate you taking so much time with me on
you
this
bet.
Manipulating the call, and I'm hoping that I'm going to get on one of your teleseminars again and tell you, hey, guess what, Karen?
Well, I love to hear those stories, too. I really do, and I don't mind taking the time with you with this situation because I can see that you've made the effort and are going to continue to make that effort, to help them to the best of your ability. That's all we can do, Sue, is help them to the best of our current ability. We're all lacking with horses in some area or another. Every single one of us. I don't care who anybody is or how many shows on RFD they do. There's always things that we don't know about horses. So, we can feel bad about that, or we can just, reaffirm that commitment to continue learning. And then just all we can do is just give our best try for the moment that we have right now.
I think you just gave me a little bit more ability to try with, and I appreciate that.
Good. You got. You got. Glad to help. Okay. I look forward to hearing from you again, Sue.
Thank you very, very much, Karen. You will.
You're welcome. Say hi to Mary.
Yeah. The great thing about the teleseminar is you can go back and listen to them because they are recorded. And Sue, if you think, okay, you want your friend to kind of hear firsthand what Karen had to say, go on to the website and you can actually go through many of the teleseminars and find the one that you're looking for and listen to them and get some of those DVDs out. Karen, have your DVDs, have you got those back in stock, your new ones yet? Or?
Yes. Yeah, the Fix It Today series is out. And actually, Sue, look, I'm almost thinking of Sue's horse for the, for another title.
Yeah, there you go.
The emotional horse.
There
the emotional horse. Yeah, I'm thinking that'd be a great addition to that title, to those titles. But yeah, we do have them back in stock. And and actually, I want to mention before we run out of time here is that we just announced two specials on the website. And the first special is free shipping on any orders of the Photonic Health Red Light Therapy. So if that's something that, you've looked at and been planning for and, trying to decide when to get it, it's free shipping on those units through the month of August. And also we have a second special, and we call it the 10, 20, 30, 40 special. So on orders over $100, there's $10 savings, $200, $20 savings, $300, $30 savings, $400, $40 savings. So that, when people place an order, they get that savings in a refund from PayPal, because that's how PayPal works, comes back within 24 hours. But on the free shipping on the photonic therapy, that gets omitted straight away when the order is placed. So if somebody places an order for over $400, if they get the free shipping on the photonic therapy, it's $21 and then $40. That's pretty big savings on some of those items. And we wanted to do that. We know the economy is turning around and coming back, but everybody's trying to kind of, catch things up. But, the fact is with horses is that we need the gear with the horses. And so we wanted to put something out there that gets, people the things that they need in a little more affordable frame. And, again, both of these specials are through the end of August. So if you go online, you'll see the specials. If you have any questions, send an email or give us a call. We're glad to help. So,
Hey,
we have time for one more question. Do I have a 5-minute question? 4-minute question?
I don't know, Karen. Can you answer one in five? We can try. You want to try?
Yeah, let's try.
Let's try it. Okay, I'm going to kind of hold you to at least 5 or 10 minutes. So, this one is
right.
From Linda. It says, I'm a senior woman with a big, strong 9-year-old horse who's quite lazy by nature. Recently, he's formed resistance, and it's become very challenging. At the end of a recent trail ride, about 3 hours, not very particular rigorously, but it is warm and buggy out, my horse rolled in the field with me on him. And after I remounted, he bucked. And thankfully, his bucks are not really athletic, and she was able to stay on. A week or two later, riding out by herself, he let out a buck again. Seemed to be out of nowhere, and she ended up walking back home. So those are two incidents, but it seems he's otherwise a solid trail horse. He will go out alone, but does prefer company. Evidently pretty experienced, goes over bridges, tunnels, through gates and all that. But she's concerned she's losing control and that he's going to take advantage of her without some kind of intervention.
Okay. I want to cover this in our next teleseminar. This is an important one. I hate to hang up on this one. A couple of things I can tell you, though, is get a security strap on your saddle if you don't already have one. Security strap, otherwise called a night latch, you can see them on my website. The type that I carry stay raised all the time. There's actually two pieces of leather on the side that's above the saddle that you can get your hand under. It's always open so you don't have to fish for it. So look at my website for that and get that on there because that's the most effective place to hang on. That's number one. Number two, get the horse even more prepared so when you feel them be tight or anything like that, disengage the hindquarters. And if you're not familiar with what that means, get this cornerstone for communication riding from the ground, riding from above. Get that foundation series and go through those exercises before you take them out anywhere again. A horse cannot buck when you've disengaged the hindquarters. It takes the power away. So practice that when you're not in those situations so that, you know, you earn leadership points when you do any of these kinds of things. But also when the horse gets tired or gets upset or, you know, something happens, it's just automatic muscle memory to you, okay? So because bucks happen really pretty fast, but when you ride a lot or you've been around horses that have a propensity like colts and things like that, you get to where you can feel it setting up, you can feel it coming, and you can take that hip away, take their power away before they even get in a position to buck. Now, I have one more piece. When a horse goes to lay down with you or eat grass with you, put pressure on the hindquarters. And I don't mean tippy-tappy, woofy-woofy. I mean, you know, put some pressure on the hindquarters so that they'll pick their head up. When a horse lays down, the first thing they need to do is put their head down. Okay, so, you know, now that that's happened to you, the first time that happens to anybody horseback, you kind of go, wow, they're putting their head way down. Wow, their shoulders dropping. Wow, the hips dropping. Wow, you know, I'm on the ground. Okay. So after those things happen, I'm sure when these incidents have happened, you replay them in your mind over and over and over. And what your mind is doing is recalibrating to identify what happened before what happened happened. And so you'll be able to much more quickly, you know, feel when that's setting up to happen. But you need to have some skills prior to that happening to know, you know, what to do. So that's what I would suggest is get those DVDs and get those things really good. So, you know, Sue's, you know, question and scenario took a long amount of time. But listening to that, it's related here because, you know, it's going back to what's not in place, going back and finding where the holes are. And there's always holes. There's always holes. You know, something can happen that you may not even know a hole is there, and all of a sudden the scenario changes or the conditions change or the moon changes or who knows what, you know, and all of a sudden what that hole is in there is going to be, you know, come out and be expressed. So those are the things that I want to, you know, suggest that you do, you know, before you even take your horse out on another ride, because you don't want this to, you know, become a pattern. You know, it doesn't sound like it's become a strong pattern yet, but, you know, it could be if you don't address it and kind of try to nip it in the bud, you know, which is ideal. Okay? So, how'd I do?
You did it. You did great.
I did it. And you did a minute and a half, I'll tell you.
I'm impressed.
Good
We've been
job.
On the phone very many times talking horses for a long time. I'm impressed that you did that.
it deserves more explanation. So let's start off with that one next month.
Okay.
Because I want to talk about it more extensively, kind of the whys and the wheres. But you know, please get that help. Please get that foundation right, you know, with the horse.
Okay.
So get
your
tools set up, too. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if we missed your question, we will get to it next month, we promise. So there'll be the full questions that we'll start off with next month. So we thank everybody for submitting those questions. And, Karen, we certainly thank you for your time and effort that you put into it. Thanks for getting all those new DVDs out for us. If you've not had a chance, go on Karen's website. She's got some really good DVDs out there. Tell them real quick, Karen, your basic program with those DVDs. There's 6 of those that are out, and then your new ones are particular, what do I want to say?
There's 3 different categories of DVDs. There's the general study. There's a foundation series along with trailer loading, knot tying, and inspirational video. Also the television series. There's 12 episodes that are on television episodes that are captured on DVD because they're not airing right now. So people wanted to get a hold of those. So that's another series. Then the most recent series we just released here this last month is a problem-solving series called Fix It Today. And where that name came from is a gentleman asked me, he worked for Western Horsemen for years and years, Rick Swan, and he said, well, Karen, you know, when you deal with an issue like needle shy or pulling back or something like that, he said, you know, how long does that take? And I said, well, usually I you know, address the issue fairly effectively in, say, an hour-long demo or something. He said, well, you should call it, you know, record. We already had the idea, but he said, you should call those, you know, fix it in an hour. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, if I share with people and show people what to do, I think most people would be happy to fix it in a day. And really, most people can. If you see what to do and you know what to do and set aside the time to do it, most of these kind of challenges, it's the same with the trail loading DVD. That's the comment I get from people. You know, the other ones are foundation. You're building your communication. But when people have a trail loading problem for years and years and years, then they watch the DVD, and the explanation is in such a way that they feel like they can go out and actually do it. I get emails that people say, you know, the horse in one session or two sessions is loading like a champ. You know, but they just didn't know. They said all those things that you said cause these problems. Oh my gosh, I realize I'm doing those. So, and the reason I recognize those, I try to tell people at clinics, is because I did those things. I got stuck in those places. And that's why recognizing even Sue's question tonight, you know, I recognize where she's at because I've been stuck there myself, you know, and for years. I don't mean for, you know, a month or two or something like that. I mean for years. I've been studying this intensely since, gosh, almost 1985. So believe me, I've been through all the stages you can imagine, and I know I'm in for more stages. So, that's where my passion in teaching is because, you know, it's a journey, and it's like going, you know, on a tour somewhere. You go to a foreign country, it'd be nice to go with somebody who's been there many times or maybe even, you know, lives there and speaks your language and can translate the experience for you and give you the best experience possible. So reaching out and getting help is the best thing that we can do. But the hard thing for the human is to be at a spot where you go, I don't have the answers. Instead of getting angry at ourselves, to just go, man, I need more answers. And then just get out there and just keep knocking on doors and being a pest and do whatever you need to get the information you need. If not for me, from someone. But just keep trying. And, you know, as I always say, these horses deserve us to be our very best. And that's what this is all about.
Okay. Well, listen, we thank everybody, and thank you, Karen. And please continue to submit your questions, and we'll get to them as soon as we can. So anything you'd like to close with, Karen? Or
no, just how much I enjoy these. I really appreciate everybody's questions and support, and I really enjoy hearing the feedback and the emails. I mean, people think, oh, well, she's not going to read the email. I read all the emails. I read those. And I respond to them, you know, as much as I can. It might not be, you know, right away, but I love to get those kinds of emails. That's what, you know, that's the juice. You know, that's what gets me so excited about, you know, what I do and people going out and taking this information and doing something with it and going, oh, my gosh, all the darns, that didn't help, you know. So that's what I get excited about. So I might jump out of bed. I wake up at 5, you know, like waiting for my day to start. So. Yeah, I'm kind of crazy like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Karen.
Well, listen, yes, thank everybody for tuning in tonight, and please tune in next month and keep those questions coming. So good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you.
Bye-bye.